You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. We appreciate you joining us on iTunes, Stitcher, Buzzsprout, wherever you're coming to us from. Thank you for listening to this episode. Leave us some love when you're downloading the episode and tell your friends. We'd really appreciate it. If you enjoy what you hear, spread it along. We'd like to open up the party to everybody.
Spread it along.
Spread it along like Nutella over a piece of bread. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, are the Doc Martens to my penny loafers, my dear friend Andy.
Hey there.
What's going on?
What was that? What was that intro?
Hey there.
Hey there. I don't like that one. Hold on. Strictly Roots and Culture, Ja Rastafari.
There he is. I love how the library is expanding. It's just getting deeper and richer
and more offensive
every single week
to my Rasta brothers. Dude, I feel like people think I'm making fun of like reggae music. I fucking love reggae music.
I think it's always read as homage.
I hope it does.
A loving homage to your favorite,
especially
kind of music.
Now that the sun's out, and you know, when the sun's out, it's reggae music and bluegrass all the time.
That's right.
Why do those two go so well together?
I don't know, because typically, I never think of pairing reggae with anything. and it doesn't sit well with anything. It's the oil to everything else is water. But I think you're right. I think bluegrass and reggae can coexist, in spite of my opinions. Our silent partner, Nate, is with us, making the sound happen this week. This week on the show, we had the band Cedar Teeth. We had Aaron and Dylan and Rayson and their manager, Chris, joining us on the show. And it was good to get back to our roots with a little bit of bluegrass this week, Andy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're more, I call them folk rock, but they definitely have bluegrass influences, and it's great. And you really, the banjo is amazing.
I know, there was a banjo, and I sort of default to bluegrass when banjo is involved, but they did have a little bit of a rock tinge, and there was definitely something folky about them. But they were amazing. They played some live tracks for us. And
we've all buried our share of animals.
They buried some animals, and they put up with our nonsense. So we hope you enjoy this conversation with Cedar Teeth. You can see them on June 24th at... where are they playing June 24th? Oh, Laurel Thirst. They're playing at Laurel Thirst on June 24th, and you should check them out. So enjoy this conversation with Cedar Teeth. So I didn't realize that the country thing was burying animals. I didn't realize that was par for the course.
That is about the only thing.
That is the way
you get animals just so that you can bury them.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I lived on a pretty busy road, as we've talked about on the show before. So it got worse and worse. And you would just weed out the stupid animals.
You took your fences down just to make sure.
The road kept creeping in and creeping in, and the animals never quite caught on.
Yeah, the really smart ones would. The best animals would go a few generations.
Yeah.
Or get hit by a few cars and, like,
and still live.
But I had to bury everything on that stretch of highway in front of my street.
You knew it was a good riding horse if it could take a few car hits. Mm-hmm. Then you knew it wasn't going to spook very easily.
Or you kind of wanted your animal to get hit just a little bit so that it have a fear of the road so it wouldn't get hit.
Yeah, you want someone backing out of the driveway to just clip it a little bit.
Yeah, just hit your dog, like, his foot,
mm-hmm.
and then have it heal really good.
It's like you've got little children, and when they were babies, you would play music at, you know, a volume that they would get used to, so as they got a little bit older, they wouldn't be...
They get used to anthrax.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just a little... Just rub their gums a little bit.
And every time they fall asleep, I would just scream at the top of my lungs just to make sure they could handle it, so I could do my usual amount of screaming.
What I'm curious about is the schedule. So an animal passes away...
Oh man!
What's the mourning period? What is the sort of the ceremony behind?
Well, if it's small enough, I don't mean to interrupt, but I think it depends on whether it fits in a shoebox and if you have the correct shoebox. And obviously, you can't get the couch
or a Safeway bag.
So that takes a little longer.
Safeway. Yeah, it was a real blow to animal burials when they stopped using the plastic bags. You know, that made it a little bit tougher. I understand. What's the
You got to strike when it's the fresher, the better, really, when you're doing a burial.
Because then you can mold them to the shape of your ditch.
Yeah, otherwise, you don't want
rigor mortis. I learned that with a horse.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Didn't bend its legs.
Too long.
Oh,
it's really
much bigger
hard
hole
to get them in there.
Yeah, that sucks.
A lot more work.
You'd have to
Yeah, because you could kind of bury it on its back with its feet straight up in the air.
Well, and then you have a nice mound over the top of it. You know, you have
I assume you mount those Tibetan flags on his legs and, you know, you make a little shrine out of it.
Farmers back in the day didn't give a fuck. They would just bury a cow in rocks. All those piles of rocks you see all around in farmers' fields, those are cow graves.
It's also
them clearing all
Jewish
the rocks out
graves,
of their fields.
Because they stack the stones.
Actually, out in Colton, I was looking at a property a few months back by your place, by Chris's house, and there was we walked up to the top of the property, and there was just a collection of cow skeleton parts. So then the cow would die, and they would walk it up there and throw the carcass out and let the coyotes get it. So it was really just... Mm-hmm. Very eerie.
That's how you get the coolest skulls.
Oh, they're really
gnawed on by a coyote for like a week.
Your nursery growing up was all coyote clean skulls?
Not so much. I kept them at bay with my whooping.
Andy, you buried an emu.
I did.
In your time.
I spiraled that emu. It was just kind of like a soft serve into the grave.
The Nine Inch Nails burial. Yeah.
But the sad part is, the more animals you bury, the shallower those graves get.
Yeah.
After a while, they kind of just are mounds.
Do you ever catch it right before a big storm and you're floating carcasses?
No, but I did have some dogs that would every once in a while run up on me with like a deer leg. A very old, dead deer leg.
There was a summer in my college house where we had rats and we couldn't flush them out. We thought it was one named Don Rattingly, and it was no less than 12. And we got quite a little graveyard going in the backyard, and that was a cat haven. And even with rats, which you should be able to very easily, dig a consistently deep grave, you even get lazy
shallow.
With that.
Yeah.
You know, you just pretty soon it's just a whatever you can puddle out with your hand, and you're just dropping them in there flush. So yeah, I can imagine. Horses and llamas and the
just
like.
A bucket of guts.
Yeah. Building raised beds so you can bury things.
I just
easier.
Started going fishing more often.
So when I was like 8 years old, my parents had already reached this point of being tired of burying animals.
Yeah,
and my pet rabbit died. Mm. I didn't know that my pet rabbit died.
Was it Jenny Bunny?
Jenny Bunny. And my parents. Instead of telling me that my rabbit had died, when I asked them where my rabbit was, they said, oh, I think she ran off into the forest or something like that.
Sure.
And a couple days later, it rained a lot. And I was out playing in the rain.
Our dad was not a fastidious man.
No. Yeah. And Jenny Bunny arose to the surface.
Oh, man.
Basically in one piece. You know?
How does mom say, and Chris ran to the house and said, Mom, Jenny Bunny's not dead. She's right there.
But she was dead.
Yeah.
She was dead.
Yeah. Very dead.
The sad part is she was dead.
Yeah.
The sad part was it was 2 weeks ago that this all happened.
This is fresh, and I can't even let myself mourn
this
yet.
This hurts.
So.
So Chris passed the mic. He's weeping.
Yeah.
He'll be back.
Well, on that emotional note, you guys played some live songs for us, and we're going to drop them into the episodes. But if you could tell us a little bit about the first one, we'll drop it in right here. What's the first one that you guys played tonight?
Well, the first one has, it had gone through a few names. At this point, it's called Echoes Grounding. It's a song we recorded at Jackpot in April or May, I think.
It was one of those months.
Yeah. And it's... I don't know. Somebody take over. I'm not sure what to say about that song.
Well, I think
that's the guy who wrote it.
Right. We can talk about the instrumentation if you want, but what the song
Yeah, let's
means.
Talk about the bass part.
Really get into that deep bass.
Yeah. It's a song about being somewhere and nowhere all at the same time. It's just kind of like a... a song about the struggle between... the chorus is, I'll give you the rest of me, but not the best of me. It's the idea of just kind of never kind of figure out where to put yourself in the correct way, but trying real hard, I think, is the basic underlying idea.
Excellent. Well, let's take a listen.
Oh, I really just fashion for it, spit an awful sound, and you seem like a ledger. Living ground, I'm staying down, lifting high above the round, living overall, on the way
song really about, now that we've heard it?
The song is loosely inspired around the fourth Rocky film. And when we were working on it, Dylan expressed all this imagery very beautifully. That
I love Cold War imagery.
Indeed. But so for a long time when we were working on it, it was called Rocky IV. And then as the song became more legitimate, there was some conversation of having it not called Rocky IV. But probably on every third set list, it still says Rocky IV on it when we get it together. So for some of us.
Yeah. Which part of Rocky IV would you say most directly inspired it?
Okay, man. It starts off with, this is why, I mean, I remember walking into practice and being like, it's just like Rocky IV, that film. I remember that thing clearly in my mind.
It was
the
my
scene where
Rocky
where Rocky's training to fight
Ivan Drago.
Drago, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's running up the ice-crested ridges.
Right, right.
So the first line is, I run ridges fashioned for and split an awful sound. So the idea, I was thinking, yeah, man, this is perfect. I'm just running ridges. It's like Rocky did, man. And the pull-ups, but I can't do those as well. But yeah, that was it, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was the best of those movies. Controversial opinion, but it was the best one.
Oh, I totally agree.
So who is the person that tells the Cedar Tea story the best? Who's got the legend down pat?
The legend.
Rayson, they're all looking at you.
Yeah, Rayson's, he tells legend. Tell that story.
How did you guys get started?
Well, it was a long time ago in a neighborhood far, far away. And I don't know. The story starts even before that, though, because we've all been friends since as long as I can remember, pretty much. And so we all played music together in different variations for a long time, mostly just for fun. And
at Roots.
And at Roots. We did play at Roots a lot.
What is now Burnside Brewery used to be Roots Organic Brewery.
Oh, that's right. I remember that place.
And these as, like, not a band, but as a whole bunch of collective different music, a collective of folks. They had basically a residency on the last Friday of every month.
Well, it started off as every Friday, and then we decided that was too much because we got really tired.
And we live a long ways away.
Yeah.
The beer was worth it, but then we had to drive home.
A lot of sleeping in cars during that residency. And how long ago was this?
That was.
I know I was in. My one way I reference it is, I was in Patagonia one year, and I came home, and the night that I came home...
The store or the region?
The region.
Okay.
And I was
to the Patagonia store to get a stare at her.
I was like, I'd done a wilderness trek for like 90 days, so I was like a fucked up looking human being when I got back. And they had a show that night at Roots, and I don't...
Was it the first one?
No, it wasn't.
Been going
it had been going for a while, but this is 2005. Because I got back December of 2005. And so I just remember going back and, like, it was pretty cool because it was, you know, these three and then other people as well that are in the band, but then some others who aren't really in the band, like, would all perform kind of separately throughout this.
Yeah, right.
And our kind of larger community of people that we're all friends with, which is a pretty big group, which is why Roots liked us, would all come as well. So, like, every one of these shows were these kind of events, you know?
Yeah, and it's like hanging around a bonfire with all your friends.
Totally, but we did at Roots Brewery instead.
We did try to have a bonfire once. It didn't work very well.
That was the last show, actually. And they were like, no more fires on Hawthorne.
You guys literally burned that place down.
Now it's Burnside Brewing.
Yeah. Yep.
They
had to leave Hawthorne.
So that's in 2005, and you guys were all kind of a collective hanging out, playing music.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did it become something a little bit more intentional and specific?
So I think one night, one of our last shows at Roots, I got up. Rayson was in the band, cover band, and they came up and played a set at the Roots. And I mean, they were kick-ass. And so I think I got up there and played a Neil Young song called Helpless, and we decided that it was a pretty sweet thing. And maybe we should get together. And that was pretty much, I think, the seeds for the band that became the first iteration of Cedar Teeth, I think.
Yeah, people involved kind of went and did other things. And we'd look around, well, we need to get somebody else. Well, shit, who are going to get but our friends? So we just kept bringing in friends and friends till we got where we are today.
If you guys could only name one thing, what would be the one thing that you think has changed the most in those 11 years?
Oh, geez. The
personnel doesn't count.
I guess personnel does count.
Gosh.
Seriousness?
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, being able to know when something actually works and not wasting time on things that don't.
That was supposed to be one word, man.
Oh, one word.
Oh no, it's one thing. That counts as one thing. I think.
Yeah, I think qualifies. That's kind of probably our vetting was getting the idea of like what good ideas looked like.
Did that happen organically, or did you feel yourself kind of getting more in tune to what works and what didn't? How does that progression come about?
Initially we had a lot of fun together playing, and we would listening back to it probably is where that started was what does it look like to have a good time, and what actually sounds good are two different things sometimes.
Sure.
And so throughout the years we kind of figured out how to whittle out the too much good time and not enough quality and get to the point where we're more productive. I think that's probably a big part of things right now.
When you get to that point and you're putting a little bit more specific energy into it, what were some of the bands that were influencing you at that time? What music were you guys listening to right when you guys are making this turn and getting a little bit more serious about it?
Oh, geez.
I think one of the big ones vocally and
Ja Rule.
Ja Rule.
It shows, doesn't it?
Ludacris. Dr. Dre.
Jermaine Dupri.
Yeah.
Best producer ever.
That's why you're all wearing extra large Tweety Bird shirts right now.
Back when we were actually kind of like, I mean, it's funny because Rayson was in the band, cover band. I think listening to the band a lot,
yeah,
really knowing like what Loose Tightness was like, because they were just so fucking fantastic, but their vocals were somewhere off in like some crazy inspired territory, but they were always so good. You know, I think it's one thing that the band listened to, they gave us kind of an idea of like what it was like to be. Yeah.
One thing that we've had a lot of kind of bluegrass string bands on the show before, and I love the fact that it's a real community. Chris, we were talking about this earlier before the show about how there's a lot of, I don't know, there's just a big sense of togetherness. And when that community is together and so coalesced as a bluegrass one is here in the Portland area, how do you distinguish yourselves? How do you kind of, what is it about your sound that you're trying to make stand out from that group of talented musicians?
I think the thing that separates us from those guys is we're just not as good as them.
So they make their bluegrass rock and roll.
No, but that is exactly it. You know, everything, whether there's banjos on it and stuff, it is. It's all rock and roll at the end of the day, you know.
Rock and roll does let you fudge some talent.
Oh, yeah. No,
I'm nominally a bass player myself, so I know it can be done pretty easily. That's when you call yourself a punk rock band, is when That's you right. can't really play your instruments.
I think we call you guys a folk rock band all the time.
Yeah.
Who are some of your favorite local bands to play with?
Oh, man.
Fruition probably would be.
That was a good show.
Favorite. I mean, we did a run with Balto, a month ago?
Yeah, a little less than a month ago.
Yeah, we did a show with Heels of the Hardwood and Balto up in Seattle and went down to Sam Bond's Garage. And Eugene and those fellows were a hell of a lot of fun to run around with. So that was
awesome.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, we like those cats.
I think probably Weather Machine was, as somebody in the audience for that show, that was a great show. That was a lot of fun. It was fun to kind of see what they do. And it played well with what you guys were doing. Like, I thought that was a good.
That was a fun night.
It was a fun night.
Do you feel like it's necessary to be on just a folk bluegrass string kind of bill, or do you ever mix it up with different kinds of genres when you're playing?
It's fairly varied. We play with a lot of string bands, and it's a lot of fun, but sometimes it is weird because our sound is kind of more rock and roll, and I don't know, I always kind of feel like the weird kid in the room sometimes.
They're always louder than everybody else. Yeah. I think that happens a lot.
Well, that's good. It kind of gets them on their feet a little bit. I think they need a little push sometimes.
As somebody who books them, who kind of takes care of a lot of that stuff, I find it to be like, sometimes it's a challenge and sometimes it's a lot of fun because, like, I can book either direction, mm-hmm. and which is fun because shows can be just completely different.
Yeah.
One show can be totally different than the other based on who they book with. But the challenge is then sometimes it's like, you know,
We're not rock enough to be rock and not enough string to be string.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. It's, you know, and sometimes it's up to other people and they're like, well, what would, you know, I sense sometimes when I'm looking at, you know, booking them with a band or something, I'm like, I have to think about, like, well, you know, will they think it makes sense?
Yeah.
You know, will the other band think this makes sense at all to play this lineup?
The best part is when it's not the other band that doesn't know if it's right. It's when, you know, the person who books you. We just played a private party over the weekend. And we pulled up, and we have a little short bus, and we pulled up in the bus a little bit late. And it was like, it was in front of had a stage in front of a barn and a big picnic area. And the waiters, they had waiters, they were wearing little red handkerchiefs, and they were just,
there was hay bales.
We weren't the band that they thought, but sometimes it's that thing. We sound rootsy enough. If you listen to some songs, they're like, oh yeah, that would probably work at a hoedown. They're expecting Hank Williams or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do think I mentioned to you on the way up that you guys should try to sound country.
We did try.
Were you able to win them over, even though they were probably very disappointed?
The last 10, yeah.
Yeah.
The other 50 weren't.
Yeah.
So won over.
I think they liked it.
I think they liked home, it a lot. Like that was it. Pretty sweet, but mm-hmm. in the moment, they didn't think it was that sweet.
I bet they don't even know Boot Scoot Boogie. That's what they're all saying to each other.
Well, the funny thing is we played it and they didn't even recognize it. So.
I think they liked it more than you're saying. So.
Yeah, I was kidding. It was a really great scene.
They loved it. Awesome.
They were amazing. It. They were dancing.
They never listened to country music again.
Yeah. They went,
aren't listening.
Yeah,
but that best was show ever, man.
Barbecue with their kids.
Well, I remember looking back at everybody in the band and saying, "Look, guys, don't worry about it. Some people just aren't listening.
It's yeah, the problem some people just don't care." So,
one
so
of those people
cool.
was Adam, yeah. our drummer, though. And it, hi, Adam. I'm yeah. sorry, I didn't.
Yeah, because Adam said what?
Yeah, right.
Some people aren't listening, dude.
That was quite a pick me up, though. Yeah. Allowed you guys to carry on.
One of my favorite Portland bluegrass bands that I've been really freaking out about lately.
Please do.
They're called Cascade Crescendo. I just butchered that name. Cascade Crescendo. They have a new album coming out called Caught in the Rain. It should be out by the time this comes out, or maybe this is a world exclusive. I don't know. We'll see. Only time can tell.
We never know until it's already happened.
I'm not even going to tell you what the name of this song is. This is the one cover song on the album. I'm a sucker for bluegrass covers, and they just fucking destroy the song. I hate this song.
It's the song Landslide, isn't it?
I love this. I love this so much. And I think you're going to like it a lot, Drew. So here you go. Check this
out. Is it Horse with No Name by Amanda?
Part of you. Ooh.
Well, depending on how time works, they're playing with the student loan for the album release party for that on the 24th of June at the Secret Society.
Oh, yeah.
Go to that show. Buy that album. The whole thing is great. But that cover is amazing, right?
Yeah, that was fantastic. They're very, good. Very good. Well, we were talking during the song. I was under the impression that everyone universally loves Smashing Pumpkins forever and always, but it didn't seem like a very popular opinion while we were listening to the song.
I'm glad to hear that, too.
I am in the distinct minority. Oh. I saw Billy Corgan at the Schnitz about a month and a half ago, actually, and it was fantastic.
Where do you think Billy Corgan hangs out when he comes to Portland?
Coffee shops?
A public library. That's my guess.
I think he hides out in Powell in the Pearl Room.
Yeah,
Powell Books.
Yeah, that's probably good. The one that's closed off. The one that's
the secret room. You have to show an ID to touch the books.
Sure.
I've actually seen him in a bad wig at Walmart. I think that's what he does anytime he gets into town.
Really? We do have a pretty solid Walmart scene.
Yeah, he's got to get his undies somewhere, you know.
Yeah. It's funny you saw him in a bad wig. I saw him where he had like drawn on hair to his head. And it just looked like a really wet,
like a Charlie Brown line of hair.
That's right. Yeah. So I want to play a little game with you guys called Mood Music. I'm going to give you a situation, and you just tell me the song or artist that
I'm really
play.
Liking this segment, Drew. This is a solid one.
It's getting more and more of a challenge for me to make these things up. But my first situation for you is you are cooking brunch. It's Saturday. You have a little hangover. You've got the one extra beer too many
just
hangover. Not killer. It's you know the French toast.
So
is
I'm
gonna,
not watching
is
Teenage Mutant Ninja
lot.
Turtles.
You may be.
Oh, that's why. No, oh.
But so if you were listening to music song, instead, if you just had the sound turned down and your some tunes turned up, what
listen
are you listening
to? Vanilla
to?
Ice. Okay,
that hang. Cool.
Vanilla Ice is the answer. Oh, for the band?
No.
You said it.
I was living
stuck.
In your description. Sorry. No, keep going. Sorry.
That was the situation. Making brunch.
You're making brunch. You're hungry.
Yeah. What are you guys listening to?
There's this really great new cover of Disarm that I just heard.
It's on a loop.
What was the band's name?
Cascade Crescendo.
I was going to say not the Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh man. I'd be listening to Tim O'Brien and Daryl Scott.
Ooh, damn it.
Real time.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good breakfast music.
Dylan, were you thinking this over?
I'm thinking.
Okay.
Still
one solid though.
So in like 10 minutes, I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
In a different.
I'd be listening to a live Pink Martini concert off of YouTube.
Oh, that seems like a really good Saturday.
Just like straight through.
All right.
There's actually a really good one that was in like Belgium or something that's on YouTube that is amazing.
So I'm half hungover, right?
Yeah.
I mean, probably put on just to get going for brunch. So it wasn't too much for my head. I mean, it's kind of too much, but this is my... I'd probably put on Third Planet by Modest Mouse. Just get myself moving, right? Just kind of... I'm off in space somewhere, but it's still working to get my food made.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Good answers. Next situation. Have you guys ever had an injury that forced you to go to the hospital?
No. Yes. Yeah.
So you know when you, like... Say you, like, you know... break a limb or you have to get stitches and you go to the emergency room and you have to wait. And during that time, like the adrenaline wears off and you're kind of in some pain, but you're just kind of bored too. What are you listening to? You're injured in the emergency room, waiting room, about to get some stitches.
Probably Eric Clapton.
Tears in Heaven.
I think that if I were in pain and I were slowly stopping bleeding in the hospital room, I'd be lonely. And I'd want to feel happy, and I'd want somebody there with me. And so I would listen to the My Buddy commercial theme song from when we were kids.
My buddy and me.
That's disturbing.
What about Kid Sister?
That's my answer for what I would listen to in the middle of the night when I can't sleep.
Wherever I go, she goes.
Kid Sister.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Kid Sister was the shittiest toy. Even little girls were like, oh, fuck this. I don't want my kid sister.
I hate my kid sister. I don't want another one.
Well, your buddy's your buddy. He can leave. You don't have to see him all the time, but you're stuck with your
sister.
Well,
the buddy doesn't imply familial relations either. It's your pal. Yeah, he's going home.
You can spend the night at his house.
You can go home. You're so much better than me anyways. Go home.
Aaron, you have not sustained any injuries, but put yourself in this situation. You've got a pretty nasty scrape on your leg. It's going to take some stitches.
You're bleeding out slowly in the ER.
Yeah. It might be even more traumatic for you because you've never experienced such an injury. So what's keeping you company in the waiting room?
Well, that would go to the classical realm to like calm myself down. Mm-hmm. So I would go to the Appalachia Waltz with Yo-Yo Ma and like Mark O'Connor.
Yeah, nice.
It's a really nice song.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's relaxing.
It is relaxing. It calmed me down.
The goat rodeo session.
What is horse burial music? What do you listen to while you're digging that grave?
So your horse
AC/DC, anything by AC/DC?
I was going to say Holy Diver, so I think,
yeah. Holy Diver's pretty good.
I'd be a little more on the nose. It'd be Federale. You would just Portland.
Spaghetti Western music?
Spaghetti Western soundtrack.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I would listen to Metallica's Black Album while I'm digging a grave.
It'll take that long, too. Mm. Yeah, that's a big old grave for horses.
Well, when I was digging
three
graves,
horses died a whole.
Yeah, most of the time
stagecoach died.
So I did listen to a lot of music when I was digging graves back in my teens. Mm-hmm. And most of the time it was KMFDM. Mm.
Oh.
Or Bile or Pantera. Very heavy death metal.
Pantera does seem
Pantera
like,
would totally work. Yeah.
Grave digging music.
Ministry, Psalm 69, that album.
Oh, my Ministry. Yeah. I haven't heard that in. Wow.
Especially the Jesus Built My Heart.
You haven't buried enough animals, Dylan.
I think it ages. Yeah. Ministry was, wow. Yeah. Tense days.
Okay. My last situation is you guys are the managers of a public pool in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
What are we playing for the families and the swimmers? It doesn't have to be family music, but it has to be sort of family friendly.
It has to be.
Well, it's your pool. You know.
Yeah, it's my pool. I'm going to play
I'm playing the album Versus by Pearl Jam.
That's good.
Whoa. Yeah. Everybody in the pool is slightly bored. And the dads are like, this guy's
no, cool. That song Dissident, that's some Cannonball music right
the
there.
Pool is way better.
What do you got, Racing?
In my swimming pool, shit. I already said my buddy, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm afraid you guys think these are trick questions. There are no wrong answers. What do you want to listen to while you're swimming? I definitely want to listen to Pearl Jam.
Yeah, Pearl Jam's good.
I can't swim, and
I'm really embarrassed to say
I'm
going to
go
right
hip-hop style. I'd probably Ooh. Throw on like The Carnival by Wyclef.
Not bad, yeah.
Just keep people moving.
Guantanamera, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great record. Yeah.
I would have to go strictly roots reggae. It would be the Harder They Come soundtrack. Everybody can get down with that.
I take it back. I would go classic rock, just like classic rock radio. Ugh. Oh man, no Boston.
Actually, no, that's good sing along music. That's good times in the pool. Here.
Yeah. Yeah, Journey sounds pretty good in the pool. Yeah.
Sure. Well, say Journey.
The best
for
part
sure.
about the classic rock radio is that Swim into the Sleep Country commercials is pretty nice.
That's solid, yeah.
Or O'Reilly Motor Parts or whatever.
O'Reilly?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I bought some parts from Gary at O'Reilly's, and Gary gave me the whole bag full of the worst parts. It was the wrong parts for my car. And I wrote this jingle, and it was like, instead of O'Reilly's, it goes, Gary, you really suck.
Ow!
That's it. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Fucking Gary.
And we'll cross off O'Reilly's from our...
Oh, yeah, sorry. Oh, no.
No.
But it's not O'Reilly's. It's O'Gary's.
Just Gary.
Oh, Gary.
Yeah, Gary. Oh, geez.
All right. Well, thanks for playing some music. You know, I think those are all great answers. Sorry to try to trip you up. I wasn't trying to play a trick.
Usually he's Johnny on the spot. He's really missing it tonight.
It can be tough. You know, it's a spotlight right into...
It's the thing. His mind thinks big thoughts. And when you give him lots of options, I think, right? Creatively, you're
that
like...
That was only one option, so I can answer that.
Yeah, but you're thinking of all the songs in your brain. It's very difficult to answer that.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just thought of the Turtles song, She's Not There. Or no, that's not the Turtles. Who is that? Who am I thinking of? Zombies. The Zombies, that song. That'd be some good swimming pool music.
Or Zombie by the Cranberries over and over again.
Sure. Fuck sure. It. Yeah. Or Linger by the Cranberries. We're just free associating now. These are just songs that you can listen to.
These are also songs by the Cranberries.
Yeah. Speaking of songs, what was the second song you guys played tonight? Set that up for us.
Oh, it's called...
It's called...
Insert Words Here.
It is.
And it's kind of a song that spends all of its time
trying to convince someone else and themselves to dance with somebody, and it ends up in a place where they didn't do it. And that's kind of the song.
Excellent.
In what scenario would you play this song?
Oh, man. Probably at a dance.
At a swimming pool.
A swimming pool. No, probably in the hospital.
Oh.
Everywhere. It belongs everywhere.
In the hospital, it becomes a tragedy.
Yeah.
Because you're like, it's...
Because now we can't use
why didn't
anymore.
I? And I'm never going to be able to dance again.
Yeah, because I can't
lost
walk.
My chance. Yeah.
Let's dance the night. Leave your guns by the fireside, and I will watch all night, setting traps and lending eyes and records turning and heel, striking down a blood. Let's all the night. The cellos where they scream the die was never so inclined to see through another's eyes and then. Didn't I dance with you?
guys' band name, Cedar Teeth. It reminds me a lot of my crazy old neighbor. I used to live across the street from this dude named Ed, and he was a fucking character. He would come over, and he'd be talking. He'd be like, yeah, fair enough. He'd end every sentence with a solid 6 to 8 fair enoughs. And he was always
rattle
like,
off some Touretic fair enoughs.
He'd always be like, come over to my house, man. We'll rock out. And one time I went over to his house. The dude's entire kitchen was giant Marshall stacks, completely surrounding his kitchen with huge sun heads on all of them. It was the loudest rock and roll kitchen ever. And he just jammed classic rock covers. Like he was on stage. It was amazing. And the entire kitchen was lined with glass knickknacks and artifacts that he had found and just lined all the shelves. So it was just every second it felt like the whole room was going to collapse and just cut us to shreds. He sat me down one time and he busted out this little box. And Ed had a missing front tooth. And he showed me. Yeah. It's probably from a glass accident, yeah. From a heavy metal glass accident.
Glass-ident?
He was making his own teeth. He had carved a handful of his own teeth, and he was showing me. He had one that was made carved out of a deer tooth. Yeah, he had, like, the stump with, like, the threaded, basically, like, a screw, and you could just, like, put whatever tooth you want on there. He had one that was made out of gray plastic.
The coolest dude I've ever heard about in my almost life.
Deer teeth. He had a metal tooth.
He was borrowing
rubber
tooth.
No, he took a deer antler and cut a piece off and carved it into the shape of a tooth. That was actually the most realistic looking one. It matched all the rest of his teeth perfectly.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. He had a mouthful of deer teeth, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone ever lost a tooth here? I knocked someone's tooth out with my head once.
Oh, I've definitely broken a couple.
Yeah. So you've got some fake ones in there too?
Yeah. Well, parts of them are fake.
Bits and pieces?
Yeah.
Mostly deer. I hear deer works really well.
Antler, I've yet to try, but I'm about to. Oh, actually.
Oh, she's yeah.
Got Aaron's got a good one.
I led to the direct breaking of Aaron's tooth once.
Yes, so he was the source.
He is racing.
Yeah, he racing.
Well, Mother Nature was the source.
Mother Nature. I mean, well, my own.
It had snowed a lot.
Let's make racing the villain.
Yeah, it had snowed. It was springtime, but it had snowed in Oregon, and this was exciting. And we were outside, and we were throwing the snowballs, and, you know. Classic snowball fight. And I saw that Rayson was gearing up to throw a very large snowball at me. And in my enthusiasm and in my excitement, I just ducked. Before he threw the snowball at my face. And I happened to just like duck right into Chris's car. Just to the hood of it.
Oh.
Straight down. So I lost a good solid corner of my front tooth.
Oh, no.
And
yeah.
That was...
So you've been injured? That's an injury. That counts.
Yeah, that was injured.
What song would you listen to when you were the dentist?
Yeah, when in the dentist.
What was playing in the dentist at that time?
I don't recall.
Genesis.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Genesis is the right answer. I don't know what the real answer was, but that is the right answer.
Yeah.
Fuck. I got a colonoscopy like an old man the other day, right? And as they're putting me under and the fucking stuff is kicking in.
Dave Matthews Band.
REM, Everybody Hurts. I was just like, no, don't let me die to REM. And I just passed out. That's got to be a doctor joke. They probably pull that on everybody. They play the first 30 seconds of that and they're like, turn that shit off. Put something else on. Got to work here.
I had knee surgery, and they did turn on the Dave Matthews Band right as I was going under.
Was it What Would You Say?
It was that album, so I knew they were going to get to it.
What if you didn't make it out of the anesthesia, and that was the last
that was my
heard?
That was my funeral dirge, was Under the Table and Dreaming by Dave Matthews Band.
How would you feel about that?
You know, I'm dead. I would feel fine with it. Just throw me in a shallow grave.
But what if that based where you ended up in the afterlife? What if the last song you heard determined where you went, and... Yeah. Ended up with a bunch of bros at the gorge forever.
Oh, yeah.
You ended up touring with Dave.
That defines my afterlife experience.
Right, the last song.
It'd be perfect. He'd be under the table and dreaming.
No,
right?
No, he'd be...
He would have crashed into someone.
$8 tall boys and nachos at the gorge with a bunch of...
Oh.
Yeah.
Heady bros.
I would be shirtless and...
Yeah, you wouldn't need that shirt anymore.
Yeah.
You'd haunt the Dave Matthews tour.
And I would have a straw cowboy hat that I kept putting on girls' heads and...
Better than me. I would have been basically hanging out in Michael Stipe's kitchen.
Yeah.
While he sat there and surfed the internet.
And I assume you'd probably... That is REM. That is the perfect metaphor for REM music.
Although if it was the if it was Everybody Hurts, you'd really be stuck in that traffic jam forever with him walking over your car. Could read what everybody that had died with you thought.
Mm-hmm. With a tube swimming through your colon.
Yep.
When
I woke up, they handed me some ginger ale, and I was like, "Oh, thank you! I love ginger ale." And they were like, "A couple of minutes ago, when you came out, you asked us for a whiskey and ginger." And they gave me ginger ale, and they were like, "Where's my whiskey?"
You butt chugged the whiskey while we were in there, and here's the ginger ale. How was that, by the way, Andy? Are you okay sharing some more? I mean, whatever. A penny, in for a pound at this point.
At this point, I think it's fair to say I have Crohn's, so that sucks.
No, that does suck.
But I'm fine. I'm on a lot of steroids, so, I'll fight anyone.
You look real buff, dude.
Yeah. And
that's why your eyebrows have gotten so big.
And they pretty much told me I couldn't eat anything green anymore. So
nothing
they
green.
Put me on the Taco Bell diet.
Hmm. Basically. Way ahead of them.
Yeah. I was ahead of the curve. I kind of feel like I'm an indigenous person. Kind of like if you were to go to Mexico, you can't drink the water without getting sick. I'm that way with Taco Bell. I can survive on Taco Bell.
You can't eat Taco Bell without getting sick.
Yeah. Yeah. I need it to survive now. It's a chemical dependency.
I thought you were going to compare yourself to indigenous people like you were living as human beings were intended to live.
Oh, not at all.
Which is off of highly processed
It's actually the opposite.
Foods. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, just don't eat anything high in fiber or fresh or vegetables or green.
I mean, isn't that a diet? That's like the carnivore diet or whatever?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm on.
There was that Atkins diet that was supposed to be no carbs, all meats and things like
I'm
that.
I'm on all carbs.
And I believe that meats. The inventor of that, I think his heart did explode.
Yeah.
So
I already fell on ice. He died by slipping on some ice.
Oh, it had nothing to do with his diet then.
Maybe I just made that up.
It had everything to do with making people eat hamburgers wrapped in lettuce, though. It was directly related to that.
It was punishment. It was karma.
Indeed it was.
Yeah, not a coincidence. Mm-mm. Andy, you want to play some music for us?
The good point of that whole story is I can finally rip into that pot pie full of chili in my freezer.
Oh, forget you've been holding onto that frozen pot pie of chili.
I've been holding onto it for months. It's almost expired.
But if it was a pot
really
pie of chili made with burrito, but it was still in bowl form, then you'd have me. I'd eat a burrito bowl of chili, but not a pot pie. Maybe splitting hairs? I don't know. You got some music for us, Andy?
Yeah. I'm going to play you a track by one of my favorite bands from Austin, the Asylum Street Spankers. This is a track from, they played the Cedar Culture Center.
Oh, Cedar everywhere.
2006. And they broke up recently. They actually broke up in 2011. But I have a soft spot in my heart for jazzy Americana that's dirty.
All right.
And funny. So these guys are great. Check these guys out. This song's called Tight Like That.
Thank you.
You don't think of filth being, you know, 80 years old.
Yeah, but it is.
But yeah. And I guess they were singing about, I mean, there was a song that had like jizz in it.
Oh, you're talking about Lucille Bogan, though. She's a different breed.
She's different?
No, nobody was as dirty as Lucille Bogan. She is the best. And she only did like a few songs that dirty.
Oh, still.
Like ended her career.
A few. That's enough.
That was not really a good representation of the Asylum Street Spankers filthiness, though. They have some really funny songs. If You Love Me, You'll Sleep in the Wet Spot. That's a good song.
Mm-hmm. Is that about peeing the bed?
It's about something in the bed. I think it's cum.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. Sorry, guys.
I feel we gotta go. Yeah.
This is
we don't go that way.
We don't work blue.
We're a clean band. We keep it.
There's no wet spots.
There's no wet spots here.
Shows.
We're very dry.
Yeah. Our beds are clean.
The bone dry band. That's how Chris positioned you guys when he was pitching you for being on the show.
Oh, I bet.
The super dry band for you.
We keep it real.
That. Nothing's moist.
I can't say the word, but it's a direction I'm making with my hand.
Nothing's like in that. Front of you.
It's a smooth move.
We're a flat line.
Well, I'm curious, because you guys have been together for 11 years and been playing music.
Is that right, though?
I guess.
2005
to
2016.
Yeah, if you count. The,
yeah, it's like so weird. We should be a lot better.
Primordial days. Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
What do you got? What are your ambitions now? What are your hopes for the band and where it goes?
Well, after you told me it's been 11 years, man, I think at some point we want to make some money. No, I mean to keep making records. I think really, money's never been the goal. Really,
it'd be nice not to go to work.
It's cool to not work. Yeah, working sucks, but yeah, to keep making records and keep growing. I think as far as the goal would be to make this have the sound always evolving into something new. I mean, that sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah, the next new song is usually the most exciting part. You know, I would definitely just hope to be able to see more amazing places. We've been able to move around a little bit, and it affords us, you know, trips to places we don't normally get to go. So as that opens up more and getting to move across the country more and stuff, that would be pretty amazing to me.
What are some of your favorite places you guys have been?
Besides this garage?
Right.
Yeah.
We'll start there. We're going to work down.
Top, yeah. The Burke was one of our... I mean, it's a longstanding old favorite spot. The Burke is a cool roadhouse on the way to Astoria from Portland. Is that how you describe that? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Playing at, you know, Tractor Tavern.
Yeah.
You
know. For me, Port Townsend and Bainbridge Island was a great...
Yeah,
place to play, and then visiting the Fort Warden.
Right, so we played up at Bainbridge at the Treehouse, and we had a break and went to see Fort Warden. Is that what it's called? Is that Fort Warden?
I think.
And so we got to hang out as a band in like the old, you know, World War One, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. The old
military structures. It was not Desert Storm.
And so the like sound there.
I'd say like 2 years ago now. Park City, that was cool.
That was a fun drive.
So they played at Sundance, and that was like a...
We drove straight through. We borrowed a van, and what time do we leave?
Oh, God.
We left late. We just drove all
way
through
too
the night.
Because somebody, I don't remember who, was late. Yeah, that was crazy.
How far is it to Park City?
It took us about 12 hours. Was that?
Oh, no, I think it was longer than that.
It was longer than that? Okay. I just drove for 12 hours and then
that was like, your leg, dude.
It was, I think it was like
57 hours.
27 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
It was
No, it wasn't cuz we left at night and we got there
I think it was 27 hours cuz that's how long it took you to saw your arm off.
Yeah. So 27 hours.
It was a long drive. It was
I think it was
at least it was nearing 24 hours.
Well, having been out a little bit and seeing some of the country with your music, what's unique about Portland?
For us, I think personally that a lot of our friends are around here.
Yeah.
And the people that, you know, not just our friends, but the people who know us. So the thing that's sweet about Portland is when we do a cool show here, we can get all the people that know us. Shows always become special because we get, folks we know well.
It's cultural.
Well, it's like Cheers, right? You know,
That's totally like you, Cheers.
Everybody you look knows out, your you know, name.
40 people out there, you go, sweet, this is great.
Yeah.
It's nice.
I think that the amount of musicians in Portland is something that is pretty significant with playing in Portland. It's just seeing how many different bands there are to play with, even. You know, I mean, we were talking a little bit about the, like, deciding which genre, and it's like, even when you choose one genre, you're like, oh my gosh, there's so many bands in Portland that are making amazing music in that genre.
Yeah, it's when you think about the music that I feel like Portland seems like a bigger city than it is. Sometimes I feel like you get, you know, I've lived here for almost 10 years and very used to this place and the scope of it, but I don't feel like I've even scratched the surface with live music or the what's out there. There's just a kind of a bottomless well of talent here, and that does seem unique. I mean, I've lived a handful of places. Even Seattle doesn't seem to have the kind of depth that we have here in Portland.
It's because Seattle sucks.
That's right.
Officially. Well, I spend a lot of time like looking for bands in other cities, like for pairings and stuff and show trades. And I mean, it literally is like just kind of my nerdy version of like researching. You can kind of get a sense. And it's like the scope of Portland compared to other cities, once you start looking in them for bands, it's like you'll see like a certain range like of approaches and styles, and in that you'll see like, oh, this set of bands is really good, and then you look below it and you're like, well, where is the below it? Like, I don't see any diversity beneath that. Or,
well, and then that one person that you like has two other bands themselves.
Yeah, totally.
It's just that web spreads out from there.
And in Portland, it's just like, I mean, it's literally sometimes seems endless how many, and not just like crappy bands, but just how many good bands play.
Plus, as far as like bands that are popular, there's something to like about all of them. That's what's weird about it. Even not into that certain kind of music, they're still really fucking good, right? Like, there's just a lot of really.
I would describe Portland's music scene right now like a fucking really good food cart pod.
Yeah, totally.
That's right. It's all really good. Hard. There's burgers. Everything's good. Lebanese food. Yeah,
but it's really hard to pick one thing to go to spend your money on. So, I just stay home and watch TV
and do podcasts.
And that's the challenge of being a Portland band, right there.
Yep.
But I do love me some poutine.
Yeah,
whatever band that translates to.
Right next to an empanada cart.
Yeah.
What are some other kinds of art that have influenced you outside of music? Is there anything that you guys draw inspiration from in the art world?
Well, I personally draw and paint a lot, and that's kind of my primary artistic kind of outlet and initial source. I mean, obviously loving listening to music, but painting and drawing and that visual stuff is really, I just kind of fake the base, you know, but.
What is painting and drawing give you as a creative outlet that music doesn't? What's unique about that?
For me, it's more mindful than playing music, which probably speaks to my playing again. But just be able to completely.
Always got one foot out the door with the bass.
Oh yeah. It's usually kicking the drummer. Right. But sorry again, Adam. I'm sorry. It's more. I love you, Adam. It's more centering, you know. I feel to be, I work through a lot more things that way. But playing music doesn't get paint all over my shirts either. So,
does anything that happens, you know, when you're painting and drawing, make its way into the music in any way? Is there any of that kind of mindfulness that you see translating into music?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, you can look at you know, music and rhythm and notes and melody like colors. Some people kind of perceive it that way. And I wouldn't go that far, but things definitely take shape in my mind the way that my bass part will work with the vocal and the drum. It kind of does have a visual element to me.
Well, it's also very literal because Rayson did all the artwork for our first record.
Well, that is true, I mean, too.
Yeah, and he did some amazing stuff.
Yeah. Who is responsible for lyrics?
That's all Dylan.
Dylan.
Yeah.
How do you approach that? What is... Are you always trying to tell a story, or are you just trying to string together some words that sound good, or what's your approach to writing lyrics?
Oh, I mean, it's kind of evolved. I started off as more of a singer-songwriter kind of guy. I was more personal. I think as the years have gone by,
it's become, I was telling Rayson, I think we were on a trip, playing, I was talking about like just the act of writing has become more communal to me. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to write songs for all that speak from all five of ours point of views and not just mine, right? So, but I think I like telling stories. I think I like never being boring or too boring, right?
Well, I'm interested in what you just said when you're talking about speaking for the five, kind of more collectively. Yeah. Is there is there kind of a unified voice? Is there a certain like point of view that you're trying to have?
I think
as
time has gone by, I think I mean, I think the idea. What I'm getting at is like the idea of like. When I was younger, I was thinking more about like just trying to get a song out, right? Like getting a thing we could play and getting. But at this point, where there's so many songs behind us, it's the idea of like a song that speaks from all of our perspectives. Yeah, I think you know, once you know people long enough, you think like, what would they think about that?
Finally, write that Rocky IV song.
Yeah, right. You do, and then you know your awesome friend sings it with you, and I think there is that thing where like. It's a communal perspective and not just about me. I think that's a big thing. I mean, about the songs nowadays are more about writing for a bunch of people.
Is there still a personal element to them?
Oh, yeah. Sure, they start there. I as far as writing stuff goes, I write it, you know, generally I write the skeleton by myself at the house. And it'll start from, like, a personal space. And pretty quickly, once I find a spot, it'll turn into, like, well... That personal thing doesn't make that much sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not broad enough.
Yeah.
And then you try to find start the universal adapting in it. To like what is bigger than that, right? What's universal? Yeah.
What kinds of things were you guys listening to when you were 15 years old?
Nirvana.
Yeah, I think all the things 15? That probably 15-year-olds.
Sublime.
I still hadn't really only got past Sublime. The Beatles. I mean,
yeah.
Even, you know, with whatever you were supposed to like at the time, it was always, you know, the Beatles and things like that coming back into pretty heavy rotation for me. Yeah, at that
and
point.
Sublime doing Beatles covers.
Right. It was probably my favorite tape I ever had.
I was just thinking about, like, 15. I was trying to figure out what I was. Yeah, I had a car, a little Honda CRX. I had a CD player. I had a Sublime CD stuck in it for, like, 2 fucking years straight because my CD player broke. And that, yeah, that's what I was listening to.
Which Sublime album? Was it 40 Ounces
Secondhand
of Freedom?
Smoke.
Oh, Secondhand Smoke was pretty good. It wasn't
my
favorite
album. Yeah, I had stole it from Fred Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 15. I'm honest answer, right? Me and my buddy Nick stole it, and my CD player broke. It was some like lightning bolt from God. You shouldn't steal CDs from Fred Meyer's, but my CD player broke.
Your version of hell was having to listen to that record
over. I really did. And
it wasn't their best shit. It was kind of a B-side album.
It was all B-sides, right? Yeah. But years later, that's the only thing I liked by them, so that's great. Yeah.
15. Aaron, what were you listening to when you were 15?
Well, there was Blind Melon. There was Soundgarden.
Oh, I love
there
Blind
was,
Melon.
There Soup? Was like all album. Of that. And then there was like this very full part of my life that was like a lot of Rent and like Stephen Sondheim musicals. It was sort of this part of my life I was in.
What's your favorite Stephen Sondheim musical?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Company.
Oh, and I don't think I know Company.
It's a great one. And I can't even remember the name of it, but it was the best. And now I don't know.
And now it's lost to history.
Merrily We Go Along.
Oh. I was a big Jesus Christ Superstar fan. I loved disc one of that rock opera.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. There you go.
I'm with you.
Wasn't that the culmination of your youth as you got to go see them on Broadway?
Well, I did, yes. Yes, I did get to go see Rent at the age of 16 in the New York theater. It was fantastic with like five of the original cast.
No, that soundtrack was hot for a little while. That
my
was
cousin Jack just recently went and saw Hamilton, and he's a big theater kid.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably amazing for him. I haven't talked to him about it.
Yeah, it's a culture of its own. Mm-hmm. You can pretty well get sucked into that.
It won 11 Tony Awards or 12 Tony Awards over the weekend.
Yeah. I'm going to say I don't really like it.
I have not. I don't know any. I've heard the opening song in it, but I have no frame reference. I'm intrigued. Everyone
it's cool
seems
that it's like
it.
A rap musical. They did a good job, and they actually like wrote like, you know, it's actual rap music. But it's historical and interesting.
There was another thing. What?
It's a.
Yeah, Hamilton. It's a
yeah.
It's a rap.
It's about Alexander Hamilton.
It's the story of Alexander Hamilton told in rap.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's blowing up.
I really want to go to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes like 11 months to get a ticket, and it's like $2,000 or something insane.
I am in line right now.
Yeah.
They do matinees, though. It's more affordable now.
It's more affordable?
It's starting to be a little more accessible. Yeah.
So,
that did make me think of something, though. I am curious about this. It's hard to ask a question because I think it'll sound dumb, but I love the harmonies of bluegrass and string music and
reggae music.
Yeah, do love that. But I'm awful with melodies, harmonies. Excuse me, harmonies. How do you guys work on those? What's it like to put together the harmonies the way you do?
Yeah, so I am horrible at harmonies, too.
I have no word for it whatsoever.
And so I just sing the melodies, right? And I write them, and then...
Yeah, Dylan sings the melodies, and then I live in harmony.
Yeah. And so your ear is just attuned to the harmony. That's what I do, yeah.
So Aaron's here, and Adam's also another harmony singer. He's not here right now, but those two make these lush beds of beautiful harmonies for me to sing in. And otherwise, I wouldn't even know what to do, so it's great.
Do you have some formal musical training?
That I do.
Okay, so yes. You've kind of... and do you like... So you can read music and write music?
I can read music and I can write music. And I studied in
college.
She's
a music teacher.
I'm a music teacher.
Yeah,
oh, she's there
got
we
her
go.
Degree and everything.
It's true.
So before... So you said you think in harmony. Does that come to you before maybe a main melody line? Or is
yes.
It even, yeah, so
yes.
You just think of that. Hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, see, I'm really interested in that. I'm terrible. Even if someone were to play it on a piano, I lose it almost immediately.
Yeah, I my whole life I've just loved to sing harmony to things. So, mm-hmm. like, I'll hear a song on the radio, and I'll have a harmony for it, and, like, that's what the song is, even if they're singing it
right.
or not.
You can never break out of that. I'll shoot the gap. If there's a song with harmonies on it, I will be singing the thing that's, like, is split right down the middle of them. So I just take the easiest route that I can find through whatever melody line it is. Singing is another thing that I think is just, it's one of those instruments that you can practice at, but you have to have a certain amount of natural ability to start with, I think. Dylan, when did you, you know, get into singing? When did you decide that this is something you loved and that you had the pipes for it?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure if I decided that yet.
You're not committed to it.
I mean, I'm sure I always sang along to stuff when I was a kid, and like I enjoyed the personality part of singing, like people who had personality voices, character voices. I just kind of dug that. And so at some point, I think, when I learned how to play guitar enough to write songs, I got into the idea of being able to like speak from like my, what I felt like songs should sound like. It meant that was probably about like 20 years old. And then it just kind of, that's pretty much it. I mean, for me, I like I said, it's cool to be in a band where people sing harmonies so well. So I can just sing whatever shit comes to mind. And it really, sometimes it's like, really good job, guys. Like, it's really sweet. You could do harmonies to that. Right. Like, but I mean, yeah, otherwise it's just all character stuff. And I like poetry a lot. And I like just the way words work and syntax. And it's, so I'm very blessed to have people who can sing harmonies is pretty much what I'm getting.
Yeah. Well, it sounds beautiful. And you guys shared one other song with us. Actually, it was just, it was your solo, song there, Dylan. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
Oh man, I was real drunk one night and I was thinking about, just about that thing you're striving towards when you know somebody and the person you want to see every day when you wake up. And that's pretty much it. It's just about like when you know somebody well enough to know that their face belongs in your morning and they're the only person you want to see. And that's pretty much what that song is about.
What's the name of the song?
It doesn't have a name. It's just
nice. That's super fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super. Yeah. It's kind of when I play at shows sometimes, but it was just kind of fun to throw out there. But
do you want to name it on the spot?
Yeah. It's going to be called
Morning Face.
I like it.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's
Morning
at least
Face.
At least a good placeholder for our purposes.
That's really nice.
So the song I played tonight was called Morning Face. Thank you, guys.
Here it is.
Let's go.
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Anybody in this world, you know, anybody you've got to see, it's gotta be you, 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 me. Can anybody hold a candle to the ocean where it meets the sea? It's gotta be you, 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 me. And when the lights go down on a lonesome part of town, you see in twilight the other side of town.
So, Cedar Teeth, thank you guys so much for being on the show tonight, playing some great tunes, and shooting the shit with Andy and I. We really appreciate you guys being here.
Thank you, sir.
What's the best way for people to find out what you're up to, and where can they see you next?
They can...
You.
Aaron.
Do it in harmony.
Well, we have a large presence on Facebook that we can be found at. We also have our website, cedarteethband.com. And yeah,
we're in the phone book under C.
Under C, Edar Teeth. Right. Our next show though is going to be super cool, it's tomorrow. Which probably does this come out?
I'm not sure we'll make it by tomorrow. Is there another show
that comes out 2 days? The show's 2 days.
Two days ago, you missed it. It was with Kellen from Fruition and the Grant Farm from Colorado.
It was incredible.
You guys, you screwed up. You should have came. Our next show after that is...
at the Laurel Thirst on the
24th of June. Yep. Laurel Thirst, yes.
Ooh, 24th, big night.
It's going to be killer.
A lot of stuff going on that night. But yeah, be sure to check out Cedar Teeth. They're all over the internet, as they said. And check them out.
If you Google us, you'll find us. We're like the first 30 hits.
Yeah.
So.
And it's incredible. We got a little live taste of it tonight, and I would can't recommend it highly enough to all you listening tonight. So Aaron, Rayson, Chris... Dylan, thank you guys for being here on Hot Garbage. Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
And thank you all for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. You can check out it and others like it every Thursday on iTunes, Buzzsprout, Stitcher, etc. We'd also love to hear from you, so reach out to the show at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's H-A-U-T-E, garbagepodcast@gmail.com. And Andy, it's time for you to take us home with a sweet jam. Right.
Well, speaking of Grant Farm and Fruition, I'm going to go out with my favorite song, and I think a lot of people's favorite song. It's a song that's really moving to me. It's called Meet Me on the Mountain. It's from their album they put out together, and it's got a lot of deep meaning. And their new album just came out, and they dedicated it to Chris Chandler, and the song really makes me think about that dude. That's a guy who got hit by a car in front of one of their shows. It was really sad. Huh. It was a big deal. And he's just one of those dudes. I didn't really know him that well, but I saw him at a lot of shows, and he was just a smiling face in the crowd. It was just like one of those dudes like, yeah, that guy's here. Fuck yeah, let's have a good time. And this song is definitely dedicated to him at pretty much every show. So check out this beautiful song, and hopefully you were at this show and you saw Cedar Teeth and these guys.
Yeah. For Cedar Teeth, for Andy, for Nate, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.
Meet me on the mountain where the wind keeps blowing our blues away. Meet me on the mountain before we must be on our way. It's good to see you, my friend, once again. Though the memory ever seems to be very much time, there's something I wanna say.
Before we must be on our way.